Welcome to Equestrian Movement's Best Do No Harm podcast. I'm your host, Katie Boniface, co-founder of Equestrian Movement with Sarah Gallagher. We work with horse riders who want to build a stronger bond and a deeper connection with their horses. In our first Do No Harm podcast, we discuss with other industry professionals how to work with horses to firstly do no harm and secondly support their mental, emotional and physical well-being throughout the training process, so that we have horses that enjoy learning and ask to be ridden. Each episode, we discuss the different influences our training can have and how we can improve our horses' overall athleticism, soundness of mind and body, and emotional fortitude, while strengthening and deepening our relationship with our horses. Each week, I will endeavour to bring to you a new episode on horse riding, training, handling and husbandry, or an interview with other industry professionals to help you address where and why you might get stuck in creating the beautiful union of dancing souls that is the equestrian sport. Are you ready to kick off today's show? Let's get started. Hey team, Katie here from Equestrian Movement, and today I wanted to talk about some of the complexities that we can see when, you know, we're following some online trainers and whatnot, and we see a lot of talk about how working with horses can be a process of personal development. And I think you'll have heard a lot of the conversations that, you know, we've had with different people in the industry where we end up talking about that kind of thing. And so I just wanted to kind of like touch on that a little bit today, because it plays such a vital role in our communication with the horses who we are in relationship to them. So we can have, you know, access to all of the tools that we have, like in our operant conditioning models, whether we're going to use pressure release, negative reinforcement, positive reinforcement, you know, how are you going to shape the behavior? That really, it comes down to how it aligns with you and how you work with, engage with your horse. And then also how your horse responds to those training tools and how they engage with you in, you know, the way that that training tool works on them. So, and even like saying the words works on them, it's like, you know, throwing the idea of we're going to manipulate their behavior into making them do something that we want them to do. And we're just looking for the right tool that's going to make them do that. And that's just that wrong mindset and the wrong perception to have with working with the horses. 100% when I'm teaching, you know, beginners and intermediate riders, the horses are very aware, especially when we're using negative reinforcement, that we're practicing telling them to do something. And so when I'm starting a beginner, the beginner is learning how to balance themselves and be a kind rider and stay off, out of the horse's way, stay off their mouth, stay off their back, you know, try and be balanced and gentle with their seat, those kinds of things. They're not learning how to tell the horse what to do. And when there's this inevitable shift at some point when I'm happy with their balance and the horses tell me that they're happy with the rider's balance, and now they're going to start telling the horse what to do from the saddle, that, you know, there's a very big shift in dynamics. Now the person riding has to be somebody that the horse wants to take direction from. Why would the horse choose to put a bit in its mouth? Why would the horse choose to put a saddle on its back? Why would the horse choose you to ride it? Why would the horse choose you to sit on their back and tell them what to do by pulling on a piece of metal in their mouth? These are the considerations and the conversations that we need to be having with ourselves when we're thinking about riding the horse, and that those conversations are really a reflection of who we are in relationship to others. So this conversation today, I don't really know where it's going to go. I'm just going to basically talk about all of the things that I've been watching and that we've been talking about, and you know, the kind of discussions that we have at the school. But if it brings anything up for you and makes you feel uncomfortable, it might be worth going and seeing somebody, whether it be a psychologist or somebody else that can support your own processing of your emotions. And this is where it really comes back to. This is also why in our holistic horse handling program, How we're going to shape the behavior is only one pillar, and how we are in relationship to the horse is three pillars. Because how the horse is engaging with us and responding to us is critical to us choosing how we're going to engage with them and what shaping plan we're going to do with them and how we're going to support them in how they're going to work with us. So if we look at our pillars of our holistic horse handling program, the first thing we're looking at is relaxation, which is your capacity for nervous system regulation. And what we're looking at creating is a felt sense of safety within the horse, so the horse feels safe in relationship to us. If the horse doesn't have an experience of safety in relationship to us, then we're only going to have access to the parts of the horse that is scared and feels threatened. So we're going to see behaviors and responses to the things that we're doing with them that are threatened behaviors, so escalated behaviors, potentially like fight or flight, or our other behaviors like our dissociation, disconnect, and sometimes just general refusal to do what we're asking them to do. So we'll see the stubbornness there. So when we're working with our horses with negative reinforcement in a relationship where they feel threatened, then the horses are going to experience pressure release from a lens of feeling threatened in relationship to us. And so then the negative reinforcement as a tool is triggering these responses, which is first why the first thing that we're doing is relaxation and nervous system regulation. Nobody wants to do this because it doesn't look like training. It looks like we're doing nothing. It's the mindset of the equestrian that I need to be out doing something with my horse. I need to be riding them. I need to be exercising them. I need to be lunging them. I need to be training them. I need to be doing something with them for it to be productive. The problem is that what you fire wires. So if you're consistently triggering a flight response to get the horse to respond to you, then you're wiring flight muscles, which aren't conducive to long-term mental, physical, and emotional health. So we're going to have issues with soundness. You're always going to have the body worker in trying to fix the psoas and, you know, the glutes and the muscles that are firing as a result of that flight response. And then if you have a horse whose personality, when feeling threatened, prefers more of like a refusal to respond. And so then the more pressure you put on them, the more they refuse to respond and they resist and jack up. And I think in America, you guys call it napping. So we're, you know, pressuring a nervous system that when threatened just refuses to respond. When we're pressuring a nervous system that when threatened chooses aggression, then we're going to see aggressive behaviors and tendencies in response to our pressure release aids. And then quite often what happens is horses that tend to disconnect or dissociate when feeling threatened, they tend to be then considered our bomb-proof best school horses. And then their behaviors just blow up out of seemingly nowhere because we're so used to working with a shut down, disconnected horse that we don't realize that they're actually dissociated when they're responding to that pressure release cue. So this is obviously where our clicker training or our positive reinforcement training becomes really helpful to us, is that it can help turn that relationship to us around with regards to that felt sense of safety. Asking for behaviors in association to treats obviously makes the horse feel a lot safer in what we're asking of them and in their relationship to us and the association to us. And so it can help to break through that wall when we're starting on that felt sense of safety, but without the capacity for the horse to develop nervous system regulation and to be able to downregulate their nervous system and feel safe with us in response to what we're asking them to do, then we're going to be constantly toggling this experience of, you know, asking them to do things, them responding like they're feeling threatened. And so it's really how they feel in relationship to us. So even if we introduce treats, if they've had experiences with humans previously where they have learned that trusting humans is bad and it's unsafe for them and never to do it again, then we're going to have a horse that feels threatened in relationship to humans, accepting treats and then throwing anxious behaviors to receive those treats because they don't feel safe in relationship to us. And so why would this conversation be triggering to someone? Well, the thing is that the horse can't experience a felt sense of safety in relationship to us if we don't know how to experience a felt sense of safety within our own body and within ourselves. So if we're, you know, bringing stress and time pressure and anxiety and, you know, all of those things to the table, then I think the nervous system is so cool. It kind of makes me think of like this little alien, you know, it reminds me of the little alien in Alien, because it kind of would like look like that, I reckon, if it was, you know, like wasn't surrounded by our meat sack. But it's like this little nervous system alien that, you know, is having this complete conversation with other nervous systems, just like very unconscious, not consciously for us. I'm trying to find my words. We are unconsciously having these conversations between nervous systems without an awareness of this is what's happening. And this is happening in our day-to-day life, and we tune it out because when we are aware of it and we're sensitive to it, it's very like triggering to us. So our nervous system learns to block out the nervous systems around it so that it's not in a constant state of hypervigilance, because we have, you know, all of these bodies around us triggering us to say, you are not safe because I am not safe. So we've got like this primal response unit that responds to our environment without our conscious awareness, communicating with our environment and with other mammals. I think that probably birds as well. I don't know much about reptiles, but I think that there's something going on there with reptiles. But definitely we can see this with, you know, dogs and horses, because they don't have access to words. This is their first language. And with kids as well. So we see it definitely in babies. And then as babies develop, they learn more of the communication through conversation and that kind of thing. But definitely they're very aware of our nervous system state and our level of stress, because that impacts their experience of their world. So when we've tuned out our body's experience, and when we've tuned out, you know, the level of stress and anxiety and fear that we're holding in our body, and we then are unconsciously communicating that to the horse. And so without having that felt sense of safety within our body, then we can't communicate that to the horse. There are some horses that, you know, are fairly okay with us being there, but we have to have a relationship with them first, where they then, you know, nurture and then they co-regulate and they offer us that felt sense of safety because they like us. And you see that, you know, when people experience like going to the horses and it makes them, you know, feel better. It helps them fill their cup. It makes them find peace. It's like their place of regulation, their own ability to regulate as an adult is with the horses. The problem then being is that if, you know, we are stressed, scared, anxious, and our horse is there to support, nurture, and co-regulate us, you know, that is a nice relationship to have. But then why would that horse take direction from us? You know, that doesn't make us somebody that is going to keep us safe if we're, you know, super reactive internally to our environment. We're not able to have that conversation from our nervous system with our horse where it's safe for our horse to relax, because we're having a conversation unconsciously with them where we're saying, it's not safe for me to relax, therefore it's not safe for you to relax. And so this is why there's like so much potential for professional, I guess, and personal, because with personal development comes professional development. But when you recognize that it's the activation of your nervous system that's having the conversation with the horse, you get to then develop the body awareness for your internal state and learn exercises and tips and tools to learn how to navigate those internal responses to your environment. And this is why we need professional help. It's because as you start to develop an awareness of how your body is responding to your environment and your life, it becomes really uncomfortable. When you start realizing that you're incredibly stressed all the time and that you're incredibly reactive to what's happening in your life, and you're, you know, 3 triple shot coffees into the day, you don't realize, you know, just how activated you are until you start building in that body awareness. And the professionals can help you with developing the exercises and tools to help you navigate those internal environments. One of the easy ones, if we're not going to like completely go down the rabbit hole of rewiring our experience to the environmental trigger and rewiring our thought processes that are associated with that emotional response, is just humming. So when we are capable of down-regulating our nervous system, stimulating our vagus nerve, so we're stimulating rest and digest, then we can just switch ourselves out of that stress state. So you've heard me say it before and I'll say it again, anytime that I'm feeling a bit anxious around the horses, I'll just start humming, and then that can downregulate us all. There is a really important flow on effect to that, where we can't come into our social engagement system from our flight response. We can't come into a social engagement system without a felt sense of safety. So we need to be able to tune into our vagal tone, our vagus nerve, and stimulate that vagus nerve into rest and digest to be able to then connect with another mammal's nervous system in a place of like fluid conversation that's not just triggering reactivity and conflict. So relaxation, nervous system regulation is the start, because we're going to take ourselves into a deeper state of relaxation, into a felt sense of safety, so that we have the capacity to connect. And then how we connect is how we engage in relationship to others. And then we're going to use the tools that we have access to, which is negative reinforcement and positive reinforcement, to figure out how we're going to shape the behaviors that allow us to build language to communicate with the horses. And then what happens is, now we're in work and we're going to have the horses, you know, just responding to the woes of work life, like their grievances, and now the fact that we're asking them to work. And so they're going to have, you know, emotional reactions and nervous system reactions to being asked to work. And so this becomes a problem with overdoing our positive reinforcement, where we're going to get, you know, a really high dopamine drive. And if the horses don't know how to emotionally negotiate that dopamine drive, and we don't know how to support them in that negotiation, then we're going to potentially see overstimulated behaviors from that, with regards to frustration, especially when we're stretching behaviors, performance anxiety, because we're not giving enough. You know, there's the idea of positive reinforcement, where we're like adding a reward to mark and motivate the behavior. But there's also just a thank you, like, good job, well done, that's great, thanks for your effort, that needs to come from us. That typically also gets trained out of us if we've been in the industry for a really long time. It's like not to use your words, because obviously when you compete, if you use your words, then you get disqualified. So being able to like mark and motivate is one aspect of it, but then just like also maintaining that connection in relationship to your horse once you're in the saddle, where you're going to talk to them and you're going to pat them and you're going to thank them, and you're keeping, you know, that gratitude to the horse for being a participant in the training activity. And so this is like the next place for riders to get lost as well, is that then we start to feel that performance pressure ourselves, you know, being able to have a positive work ethic, a good relationship to work where you know how to effort and keep your social engagement system online is very challenging. And that is like the end goal of holistic horse handling, is that we can maintain focus, effort, and relaxation. It's hard to get the three together, especially for ourselves and then for the horses. So this is one of the problems that arises when I'm working with my students, is that we'll be working on a, or not me necessarily, but they themselves have a specific goal that they want to achieve. And in trying to achieve that goal, they start to get frustrated and irritated that it's not happening for them and how long it's taking, and then thinking they're not good enough, and then thinking that maybe their horse needs a different rider, or maybe they should give up altogether and horse riding isn't for them. And so then we've taken ourselves out of that social engagement system, which is what is keeping the horse cooperating with us, right? Is like the place where the horse is responsive to us and in conversation with us is when we're relaxed and our social engagement system is online. And if we're starting to doubt ourselves and feel bad about ourselves, then that's where, you know, we're going to take that social engagement system offline. And so then the horse has less chance to actually respond to us, because now we're working out all of our self-worth issues onto our horse instead of just riding the horse. And so this is where horse riding can become such a game of personal development, is that you need to catch those cycles that your mind goes into when things aren't going the way that you want them to or the way that you think they should look. Quite often what we think our horse riding journey should look like and what it actually looks like do not align. And so even though you may be seeing progress with your horse and getting better as a horse rider, if it doesn't look like what you thought it was going to look like, then you think you're not succeeding and you think that you're not doing a good job. And so then your self-worth gets pulled into it and then you spiral on that. So along with the humming, I have a super easy trick to pull ourselves back out of that cycle. The hardest part is that you have to catch yourself. You have to catch yourself getting frustrated or starting to think you're not good enough, or, you know, whatever spiral your head goes down when things aren't working for you. One of the first things that I do when I'm introducing a new rider to our horses is I get them to smell them into themselves. That makes sense. So we get them to put their arm, like kind of caress them around the neck. Well, before we do that, we are asking for permission to be in the horse's space. And then when the horse consents and gives permission to be to allow that person into their space, then they soften, and then they can kind of like put their arm around them and caress them and then breathe the smell of the horse into them. And what I'm asking of them when they're smelling the horse into them is to breathe them, like find a space in your heart that you can breathe them into and just keep smelling them and breathing them into your heart. And so what I'm looking for is some relaxation cues from the horse and that the horse is softening into them. And I'm also looking for the rider to like just let go of a little bit of tension and that sort of thing as well. So, you know, some riders are super eager and keen, and so they're too excited and I need them to just be a little bit calmer. And then some riders are very scared, and so I just need them to feel a little bit safer for the horse to invite them onto the back. And so then, you know, that's our entry level to having permission from the horse to sit on them. And then when you're riding them and you start to get frustrated or, you know, question your ability and those kinds of things, then we can just stop and do the same thing. You can just stop and, you know, lie your body against their neck and just breathe them in until you find yourself back in your state of relaxation and your social engagement system. You should feel the tension release out of your body. You should feel that frustration and I don't even know what the self-worth feels like. Just, you know, the whatever you've caught yourself up on and spun your wheels out on, that's stopped you from like riding with connection. You can just like stop and reset. Both you and your horse can stop and reset and try again. So it's important to have such an awareness of yourself that you understand what your horse is responding to that is driven from the state of your nervous system, and what your horse is doing that is them, and how to tease the two apart. And particularly for those of you that listen to the podcast, most of you are very sensitive and empathic, and so it can be difficult to tease apart like your experience and like what you're feeling that is the result of others around you and what they're experiencing. What happens is, because our nervous system is so sensitive to the state of the other nervous systems around us, is that we can end up feeling like, you know, how that other nervous system feels and not know the difference between what's ours and what's theirs. And then that's also how we can, you know, project our own experiences onto the horses as well, is that they're going to see, you know, the state of our nervous system and respond to that. And so then their experiences of us, their responses to us become how they're experiencing our own internal state of stress. So this is where I find, you know, the cookie cutter version of operant conditioning, where we're just going to escalate pressure until the horse responds, or we're going to treat reward for each response, or whatever it is. It's just, relationships aren't that black and white. If they were, then, you know, it wouldn't be any good to any of us, because we would be able to get others to do whatever we wanted, but then also everybody would be getting each other to do what they wanted. So I don't know, there's just no way to get everybody to do everything that you want them to do. And it's about, you know, how can we be in relationship to others? Like, where is that fair exchange where a felt sense of safety is built and trust and confidence is built in each other, and we're enjoying each other's company? So at the end of the day, like, it does help to have a wide variety of shaping plans to go to. So if like one specific shaping plan doesn't work for you, you can try the next. And it's also how your horse is in relationship to you, and who you are in relationship to your horse, that has the biggest impact on whether or not your tools for asking your horse to do something are going to work and your shaping plans are going to work. So that's why when we're working with the horses, first we're looking for that felt sense of safety. Are they safe to relax in relationship to us? And that in itself is such an easy and yet challenging exercise to do. Nobody wants to hang out with their horses. Well, as adults, we don't have time to just hang out with the horses. We don't feel like we have time to just hang out with the horses, because time is precious and we must be doing things. However, we need to prioritize time with the horses for us to get down into a felt sense of safety and to get our vagus nerve coming online, so that we can get into relaxation, so we can get into our social engagement system, so that the horses can relax with us and feel safe with us, safe to connect. And then we're looking at that conversation of, you know, who we are when we're asking things of our horse and how we're going to give direction. And if you're a beginner, you're not going to be confident in the direction that you're giving, because you're not, you've not got enough experience to really have confidence in what you're doing, because you're just practicing. When the horses know the difference between us practicing how to ask them to do things and when we're actually asking them to do things. So you want to be comfortable with being able to ask the horse to do things and not just practicing your tools. That in itself is a challenge, because when we're asking horses to do things, then the quality of the relationship is in how they respond to us and being able to offer choice and consent. And so when you're learning how to get horses to do things and they say no to you, then you're like, okay, well, how do I make my horse do this? And so again, that takes you out of that two-way relationship with your horse, because you're now doubting yourself and your own ability to get the horse to do the things that you want them to do. And you're now trying to make the horse do something because you're now like in that place of, I can't get my horse to do this. I've asked my horse to do something and it said no. Everybody around me tells me now I'm creating dangerous horses because I need to push them through it and make them do it. So this is where you're experimenting with that conversation with your horse, really. It is obviously where, you know, our positive reinforcement training is really helpful, because it's a lot easier to ask a horse to do something when treats are involved and the horses are far more enthusiastic and willing to give you behaviors for treats. But it comes with the flip side, where they're going to inevitably figure out that we're manipulating their behavior with treats eventually. Like, to begin with, they're like, cool, sweet, this is fun. Like, I'm going to get some treats for doing this super simple thing. But over time, if we're like consistently asking them to do things where they don't feel safe, or it creates pain or stress, or, you know, it's a high pressure situation, like going into a float, and we're trying to manipulate their behavior out of that fear response without creating a felt sense of safety, then the treats themselves create their own stress as well. So once we have capacity to self-regulate and connect, and we have an idea of how we're going to work with the horse and how we're going to give them directions so that they're well received, then we're building out that language with them so we can ask multiple things of them, and we're linking behaviors, and then we're paying attention to, you know, how long the horse can hold focus and attention for, because the mind is like a muscle and we have to exercise it. So if we want them to be able to stay cooperative for a whole hour, they need to have the mental strength to keep their focus and attention on us for a whole hour. And that's why they say when working with green horses is that it's better to do short, frequent bursts of work than it is to do, you know, a really long period of time with them once a week. We're trying to create a positive relationship to work where they can maintain relaxation and enjoy learning, and movement feels good, so that we can get focus, effort, and relaxation together. So if that all sounds like a lot, I have some recommendations for you. So while I can say, you know, all of these things that are required of us, I'm also not a psychologist or a therapist that is going to be able to offer you the tools and the support to be able to do it. So you might need to find a professional local to you that you can seek that support from. But there's also some really good books, and I'm going to share them with you. One of them is Polyvagal Exercises for Safety and Connection, that has 50 practical exercises that you can implement yourself. And it also has some good theory in the beginning of it to help you understand this concept of felt sense of safety in relationship to others, so that you can build connection and relationships. Another book, I'll have the link to these in the show notes. Another book that I really enjoy is Peak Mind, and this book has 3 exercises in it that helps to build your own capacity to hold attention and focus. And then it also has a lot of other really nice theory around that development of attention and focus and why you're using those exercises. Brené Brown's work on Dare to Lead is always really helpful. She goes into a lot of her research around psychological safety in relationship to others of power, and emotional agility and compassionate leadership. And, you know, they're the tools that we're reaching for when we are working with our horses and trying to engage them in how they're going to take direction from us. And then there are just a lot of tools and different ways of working with our mind outside of a psychologist, if that's not the choice that you want to make. There's plenty of books on cognitive behavior therapy, neuro-linguistic programming and tapping. You know, there's some handy resources to have that help you to navigate those places that our mind can go when we're not, when things aren't going well for us, because all of these things are like hardwired in and programmed into us, a lot of it as children, but then reinforced and consolidated as we get older. And so sometimes that reprogramming is very challenging if it's a program that we've been running since we were very young and we are trying to rewire that. It can bring up a lot of emotional baggage that we have been avoiding looking at and addressing, which can be very uncomfortable, especially if you've experienced trauma. So definitely if you have like severe anxiety or PTSD or PTSD, then I would definitely be working with your psychologist with this as well. But if you don't have any big trauma, but you've got, you know, we inevitably have situations throughout our lives that have wired us in a certain way that makes us bring our walls up and put our boundaries in place to protect ourselves. Negotiating that for how we are in relationship to others is part of the journey as an equestrian, and why so many people will say that it is a personal development journey. So I hope that has helped you have some insight into how you want to relate to your horse and how you want to work with your horse, and maybe why you've been feeling a little bit stuck with how you're going to work with your horse, how you're going to progress with them, or maybe even why you're feeling conflicted in some of the tools that you're going to use. Because, you know, the people who aren't thinking about this are thinking about how they're going to make horses do what they want them to do so that they can achieve their goals, even if they're achieving their goals at the expense of horses. And that's what leaves those of us who are trying to have a good relationship with our horses and enjoy our horses feeling conflicted about the tools that we're given and the way we're told to work with our horses. So check out the link in the show notes to get the list of books that I just shared. If you have any aha moments from this, make sure you tag us over on Instagram or just send me a message, send me a DM. I love hearing what your takeaways are. That's it from me for today. Until next time, happy trails. If you're loving what you're learning in the podcast, you've got to come check out the Arena Classroom. The Arena Classroom is our community for all things training for connection, where we delve into exercises to build our horses' trainability, process emotion, and build emotional resilience. It's where you can get individual help applying our tools like consent, communication, confidence through curiosity, connection, and so much more. It's where you learn a level of communication and connection that will blow your mind, and other trainers will tell you it's not possible. It is a safe community where you can learn training tools not shared on the podcast that will open up that connection and will further build your confidence in you and your horse's potential, so that you can stop doubting that you're good enough for your horse and questioning if you're doing the right thing. It's where you can come hang out and connect with other First Do No Harm trainers just like you and me. It's my favorite place on earth, and it will revolutionize what you believe to be possible with your horse. I guarantee it. Come join us at www.equestrianmovement.com/the arena classroom.